from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The name of God is mercy. That's the title of a new book-length interview with Pope Francis. This week on Register Radio, Jeanette DiMello and our Rome correspondent Edward Penton talk about this new release. And then Jeanette and Register film critic Stephen Gray Donis look back at the films of 2015 you've got to see. Welcome again to Register Radio, a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DiMello, editor-in-chief of the Register. Thanks for joining us. Our first guest, Edward Penton, began reporting on the Pope and the Vatican with Vatican Radio before moving on to become the Rome correspondent for the National Catholic Register. Edward has also reported on the Holy See and the Catholic Church for a number of other publications. Today, Edward talks with Jeanette about the new book-length interview with Pope Francis, The Name of God is Mercy.
Edward, it's always great to have you on Register Radio. Pope Francis has this knack for making mainstream headlines, and he's done it again this week. And these headlines have talked about the mercy of God. That's pretty difficult to get into mainstream media. How did Pope Francis do it this time?
Yes, well, it really revolves around this new book that he's got out. It's called his first book, although there have been others that have come out similar to this, and the fact that they've been book interviews. This is a book interview with the Vaticanist Andrea Tornielli, and he talks all about his views on mercy, and it's really aimed at emphasizing the merciful face of the Church to those who may not be aware of it. I think the Pope is very concerned that the general populace, if you like, tends to see the Church as sort of condemnatory and prohibitive. And he's sure, desperate to try and make sure that they see the Church as it really is, which is having this merciful face, that the merciful face of Christ is above all what the Church is about. And that is what he calls its first attribute. And so he's really keen to stress this and get this emphasis out to sort of counteract and neutralize the views of the Church as being, as having a negative image, if you like.
And so in that sense, it's not a theological work. It's and some people have actually criticized it for that. It's not weighty theology per se. So it's intended for a much broader audience than that, correct?
Yes, and this is a theme that the Pope has often raised. He says, you know, the Church isn't above all about sort of studying, you know, the intricacies and detail of theology. It's all more about sort of the practice and really bringing people into the Church who he says are deeply wounded. And he talks about this a lot in the book, that humanity is deeply wounded and they've lost a sense of, also within the Church too, and sort of lapsed Catholics, they don't see the sins as being curable, or they don't even recognize the sins. And so he talks about that in this book, and he says that too many people think that there's no redemption for their sins, and they're too afraid to come to God or to believe that he would actually forgive them. So that's a very strong theme that gets through this book. And it's put in a very simple way, really, to reach out to all people and speak in their language.
He uses many, many stories. He uses stories from his own life. He uses stories from the lives of previous popes, Pope Pius the 12th and Pope John Paul the I. Do any of these stories stick out to you?
Yes. Well, he talks about John Paul I and Paul the VI in the context of trying to show that they considered themselves sinners as well. He was asked, is it unusual that a pope considers himself and speaks of himself as a great sinner? And he said, yes, it is. And he pointed to those two popes who kind of said similar things. So that was quite interesting. And he talks about Pius XII in the context of saying that he said it's a tragedy of modern life that society has lost a sense of sin. And he talks, I mean, this has been also one criticism perhaps that the Pope has had to face sometimes, that, you know, there's not enough talk of sin and redemption. But he does mention it quite a few times in the book. And certainly in the first half of the book, it's really quite powerful in the sense that he really discusses this and brings it in a way which I think people will understand.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's about 9 chapters. It's not a very long book. I was able to read it in just an evening. Of course, I was focused totally on that. But it's a pretty easy read, and it's really a great read for this Year of Mercy. In fact, in it, he describes how the Year of Mercy came to be. Can you tell us what he has said about the origins of the Year of Mercy?
Yes, well, he says it came through prayer and also through reflection from his predecessors and how they've discussed mercy. And also that he feels it's a time for mercy. He says that it's time, he says, for the church to show her maternal side, her motherly face, to a humanity that's wounded. So this is how he's developed it. But also from his own background, he became very aware of the importance of mercy when he was very young. When he was 17, he said he felt abandoned when his confessor died, mm-hmm. Because he'd been a person who'd helped him feel the mercy of God. And of course, his motto as bishop, I believe, is about mercy too. So he's long held this great interest and will to emphasize the importance of mercy for some time.
Sure, and it really is a gift, I believe, to the church, for him to be focused on this so much. I mean, so many of his homilies, so many of his audiences have focused on this theme, and it really has to make you think, and it has to make you think about how does your life reflect mercy? Are you experiencing God's mercy for your own sinfulness? Are you extending mercy to others? And that's something he talks a lot about. But he also talks quite a bit to pastors. There's a whole series of questions, I believe, that are really geared towards confessors. What does he have to say to other pastors of the church?
Yes, well, he talks about, it's a whole chapter about the confessional as well. And yes, he talks about the pastors, especially being in the confessional, not being too judgmental and being not being too curious and inquisitive. He feels that's mm-hmm. an unhealthy characteristic for a confessor to have. But so he's very keen that the priests do show the sort of God's merciful face before they show any sort of signs of condemnation or judgment. So that too is very strong. He brings out, of course, the parable of the prodigal son. Which he talks about, you know, being God's overabundant mercy, and the importance of that being at the centerpiece of how a priest should really go to those who are suffering and in sin, and to try and be that the father in that parable. So that's his basic approach. Now, of course, some people say, well, this is all well and good. This is all exactly as it should be said, but will people come in because of it? Will people come in to the church and be retracted to the church because of this emphasis on mercy? And some say, well, you know, what a lot of people want is a change in the church's moral teaching, mm-hmm. and that's what they would want first. And so they say, well, you know, perhaps he's coming at it from the wrong end. But I think it's probably too early to say, and it may take a while for people to realize that, or to at least to grasp what the Pope is doing here and to really see that he's trying to open channels for them to come into the church and make it easy for them to come into the church rather than put off by any kind of negative image that the church might have.
Absolutely. There's certainly a welcoming spirit. This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio, and I'm speaking to Edward Penton in Rome, and we're talking about the Pope's book, The Name of God is Mercy. And actually, this is an interview with the Pope, a book-long interview. And, you know, one of the things that got a lot of attention, I guess I shouldn't say a lot, but it was mentioned in many of the mainstream articles especially, is that he seems to clarify his previous statement made a couple years ago when he said, "Who am I to judge in relationship to homosexual behavior?" And that was often taken out of context. So how does he clarify that statement?
Yes. Well, he says that he was basically paraphrasing the catechism, which says that homosexuals should be treated with delicacy and not be marginalized. So he was really keen to try and change, to try and put out the sort of correct messages he was trying to get out of that time. If you do look at the comments in context, you know, he does preface it by saying, you know, any homosexuals who are sincerely looking to do God's will, then who am I to judge? It's not just who am I to judge, but of course that was latched onto and misread and misinterpreted. But he said that he was actually glad in the book, he was glad that to be talking about homosexual people, because before else comes the human persons and the human person's dignity, and that people should not be defined only by their sexual tendencies. So he was trying to sort of recalibrate that a bit, mm-hmm. and try and sort of bring back people to what he originally meant. And so it's a chance for him, I think, to correct that.
That's good. And, you know, we just have a minute left, but there was another part. He spoke a lot of the prodigal son, but also of the big brother. And many of us yeah. fall into that category. And he said sometimes it's good for those who are very rigid to slip up a bit because it brings them closer to God. What did you think of that part?
Well, yes. I mean, he did talk quite a bit in the second half of the book about this. But I think he meant by that, you know, basically don't be too rigid, that, you know, mercy comes before doctrine is how he looks at it. Although some people were very concerned about that statement, because it seemed to imply that he's saying, well, somebody who seems very rigid should in fact sin in order to experience God's mercy, which of course would be rather an odd thing for a pope to say. But it's difficult to read exactly what he means by that. But certainly it's his way of approaching those who perhaps are a little too close to the law, rather than trying to explore God's mercy and try and act out on it.
Well, certainly this gives us all food for prayer, that we take it to heart and really try to understand how God's mercy is reflected in our own life. Edward, thanks for bringing this book to us, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Okay, thanks for having me on, Jenna.
When we return, we'll talk about some of the great films of 2015 that you may have missed. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
In today's world, we have all kinds of misinformation and even disinformation about Christianity, Catholicism, and religion in general. And we need a source that is going to give us direct quotations and authentic news about what is going on in the church, so we know what the Pope really said and not what the media said he said. We need to know what the Synod is doing, what the encyclicals mean, in order to be able to give the facts of our faith. For that reason, we need the National Catholic Register, which will give us the good news along with the hard news of our world today. And in that way, we can have what we need to go out to our world and give them the good news of Jesus Christ.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DiMello, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Stephen Gray Donis, is a film critic for the Register, as well as the film reviewer for DecentFilms.com. Stephen says there were a number of movies released last year that you may want to check out this year.
Well, Stephen, it's the start of ordinary time, which means you're back in your diaconate program classes, and you spent the break here, the holidays, the Christmas holidays, reviewing some movies for the Register for 2015. What were the best movies? And we're so grateful that you do that for us every year, and I'm glad to be talking about it with you again this year.
It's always a huge crunch for me around this time of year as I try to catch up on all the movies that I missed. My wife Suzanne says that there should be a support group for wives of film critics around this time.
Absolutely. Well, I'm sure there are many movies that a lot of us missed. I don't even know. Was this year even a good year for film?
Well, yeah, of course, I don't see all of the movies, especially with my ongoing diaconal studies, but there were a lot of brilliant films, and okay. We don't have time to discuss all of them, but my top 10 and actually my top 30 are available right now at the Register website. I will say that this was a year in which I struggled to find uplift in the year's best films. There's a lot of darkness in many films, which doesn't make them bad. Pope St. John Paul the Great wrote in his letter to artists that even when artists explore the darkest depths of the soul or the most unsettling aspects of evil, they give voice to the universal desire for redemption. But uplifting films are important, and I try to highlight them when I can.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. Well, I think I appreciate that balance, you know, between the dark and the light in the film reviews that you do. So, like I said, I haven't seen very many movies this year. We often at the Register, you know, look out for the religious themed movies. And when I think of that this year, the only one I actually saw and even can think of is Spotlight, which had some mixed reviews. And but were there others?
2015 was actually an amazing year for Catholic themes and religious themes generally, although many of the films like Spotlight, which I'll come back to in a moment, were certainly not on the uplifting side of the ledger.
No.
There is one that was, and it's getting quite a bit of critical love. I want to highlight it. It's John Crowley's Brooklyn, starring Saoirse Ronan as a young woman from a small Irish village. It's a period piece set in 1952. She emigrates to the United States and settles in New York with the help of an Irish priest that her family knows back from Ireland. Now, religion is not as prominent a theme in Brooklyn as in Spotlight, but the church mm-hmm. is depicted as a key institution in the local community. If any film this year exemplifies what I wish more films were like, it's Brooklyn. It's so lovely in so many ways. Other films with notable Catholic themes include The 33, starring Antonio Banderas, based on the Chilean mining disaster, Concussion, starring Will Smith as a Nigerian forensic pathologist whose Catholic faith plays a role in his fight to get out the truth about pro football and brain damage, and an indie called Something Anything, which is streaming on Netflix, about a young newlywed looking for more out of life who takes an interest in the writings of Thomas Merton and a high school classmate's monastic vocation.
Ah, that sounds like a very interesting one, an indie on Netflix, huh? So, well, this is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio, and I'm speaking to Stephen Graydonis, and we're talking about the best films or the films we should see from last year, 2015. We can reference Steve's review of these films, his list of the best films at ncregister.com. You know, Stephen, our audience loves family films, you know, again, being the Register and trying to highlight the positive. That's, of course, something we try to bring to our listeners, to our readers. I've seen only one of those movies this year, and that's Inside Out, which I really liked. What else did I miss in this category?
Inside Out is my number two film of the year. It easily could, after Brooklyn, it easily could have been my number one. It's mm-hmm. a brilliant, powerful film about the simple joys of childhood and the greater emotional complexities that confront us as we grow up. But 2015 was a terrific year for family films, especially after the year before, 2014, which was just terrible. I think they were saving up all of their family films for last year. There was also Shaun the Sheep, the Shaun the Sheep movie from Aardman Animations, a movie that I can't even think about without smiling.
That's great.
The Peanuts movie, which actually honors Charles Schulz's legacy. Those are some of the better animated films, but also in live action, Kenneth Branagh did a great live action version of Cinderella with Lily James as Cinderella. I called it in my review a subversively non-subversive retelling of the Cinderella story. And I just over New Year's with my family, I watched Paddington on Amazon, a film that from the trailers looked terrible, but it really blends whimsy with remarkable style and a lot of emotional appeal. So great year for family films.
You know, my son is just 2 years old. He doesn't really watch films much at all these days, but I really can't wait to start watching films with him. Shaun the Sheep is one that I smile to when I think of it, so I look forward to seeing that one. Just last weekend, I saw Star Wars with my husband, and, you know, when you think of action or sci-fi films, that would be the film I think of this year, but was Star Wars among your top movies of the year?
Star Wars is blowing away all the records at the box office, and I will say that I enjoyed it. I also enjoyed the year's other biggest film in this category, Jurassic World. Neither of them quite made my top 30. There are a number of films that did. For pure top-notch mindless entertainment, which is something I'm a fan of, you just can't beat Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. Ridley Scott's The Martian was also very popular, starring Matt Damon. It's a Valentine to science, but it's also an ode to the irreplaceable value of every human life and the extent to which we'll go to save even one person. Not for all tastes, but amazingly well-made, George Miller's Mad Max Fury Road, which is just an insane film, but one with some intriguing religious and social themes. And then finally, for art house fans, definitely look for The Assassin from Taiwanese director Hao Xiaoshen, a gorgeous film about a female assassin who finds her conscience.
So let me go back to this for a few minutes. You said those things very quickly. And The Martian sounds very interesting to me. I do like a fair bit of you know, science fiction. It's, of course, my husband's favorite. Is this a movie that I would like, you know, along with my husband? Is this the kind of thing that we should go see, we should watch together, and we might both get something out of it?
I watched it with my wife, Suzanne, and with our two older boys, and we all really enjoyed it. Matt Damon is he's really playing to his strength in this film. It is a movie about a manned mission to Mars that goes wrong. One astronaut is left behind and has to survive for, I don't want to give anything away, but a long period of time,
yeah,
on his own. And he has the science chops to do it. And so it's smart. It's very funny. And again, quite a bit of emotion as well.
Well, I have to say, from this conversation, I certainly want to see Brooklyn, and I certainly want to see The Martian. And of course, you know, we've talked about the sci-fi, we've talked about family, we talked a little bit about church movies. I think that the category that we've missed are the romance. I mean, what were the love stories of the year?
Well, other than Brooklyn, which is, I didn't specifically say that, but Brooklyn is definitely a love story. There are also some others well worth noting. One of the most year's best films, I think, is a movie called Love and Mercy, which is about the Beach Boys, specifically about Brian Wilson, kind of the musical genius behind the Beach Boys. And he's played at two different points in his life by John Cusack and Paul Dano. Now, the film shows his challenges with drugs and with mental illness, but it also really highlights the redemptive power of love. And despite some of the darkness in the films, this is really one in which the uplift ultimately outweighs the darkness.
Absolutely. That trailer certainly engaged me. Now, you know, we have a little bit of time left. I guess, you know, you said Brooklyn. What's the order of these movies? If I had to start watching them, what would I start with? Of course, Brooklyn. But what's next?
Well, Brooklyn and Inside Out are my top two films. And I said I wanted to get back to Spotlight.
So that's right.
I do want to mention that. You know, this is obviously, for those who may not know, this is a newsroom drama about the journalistic expose of the Boston Archdiocese cover-up of sexual abuse by priests. This is a movie that makes for painful viewing, but I think it accurately diagnoses the cultural tendencies, both inside and outside the church, that made this problem invisible for so long. So I think it's an eye-opening film, and I think it's an important film. It's well worth seeing. Another movie that I really want to highlight, one of my top three films, is a film by an African director named Abdur Ahman Sisako. It's called Timbuktu. It's available on Amazon, I think. This is a fact-based drama about a short-lived Islamist jihadist movement in Timbuktu in Mali. Now, in Mali, there is an indigenous Sunni Shia culture that's much more relaxed and moderate. And this is a fascinating depiction of two different sides of Islamic culture, of extremism, and then also resistance to extremism. When I think about a film like that that gives me an insight into another culture, into what it's like to lead another life, I think of that great quote from C.S. Lewis, who said that in reading great literature, I become a thousand men and yet remain myself. And Pope Pius XII, in his discourses on the ideal film, also talks about the power of film to bring us to faraway countries and to show us lives of people who are different from ourselves. And of all the movies that I saw this year, I think Timbuktu is the one that I most value in this regard.
That's beautiful. I could listen to you all day long, Stephen. I am so glad that you had the time to be with us today. And, you know, as your diaconal studies allow, we'd love to have you back on Register Radio. We appreciate what you're doing for us and for our listeners. And thanks so much for being with us. Our prayers go with you.
Thank you, Jeanette. I really appreciate it.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for the microphone to listen or download the show. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.